Today, you are going to have two expert coaches helping you responding to the most burning questions about raising a toddler. We asked on social media, what do you want to know? What do you want to know to raise a toddler with a lot more peace? And then we collected all those answers, and I'm bringing with me today my colleague, parenting coach, Devin from Transforming Toddlerhood. You can find her on Instagram, and we are going to respond all those questions. But before we go there, I want to introduce you to her, and then she has a very special thing that she wants to invite you to join us for. Hi, Devin.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here. Finally, I have you on my podcast. I've been following you for such a long time, and I felt goosebumps when I saw an email from Transforming Toddlerhood asking me to speak in your toddler conference. And I'm like, what? Like, is this real? Pinch me. It was a pinch me moment because I wanted to be on that conference for years. And finally, I'm able to join you. And yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
I'm so excited to have you a part of it this year. And the conference is, oh my gosh, I can't believe it's the 7th annual conference. And we're just so excited to have you there and help parents understand more. This year, you're talking about discipline and helping parents understand more about what developmentally appropriate effective discipline looks like in the toddlers.
Yes. And before we go to the Q&A for this podcast episode, could you please tell us a little bit more what parents can find on that conference besides my session? Because there are many other parenting experts that are joining the conference, where they can know more about it and everything about it before we get into the episode.
Absolutely. So first of all, I'm Devin Kunzman. I am toddler expert and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. And I founded Transforming Toddlerhood with the mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible and to really support and empower parents and caregivers to overcome the challenges of toddlerhood while nurturing their little ones' development and creating confidence in their own parenting skills. And we do that through positive, effective, developmentally appropriate skills. And one way that we support parents in this world is through the yearly Transforming Toddlerhood Conference. And this is a completely free event with more than 25 experts in toddler behavior, development, and well-being talking about every aspect of toddlerhood, whether we're talking about sleep or big feelings and emotions or discipline, setting limits, hitting, body safety, consent, all of these topics that come up when we are raising middle ones, when we are in the trenches, because we know toddlerhood is a critical developmental period and a challenging developmental period. And, you know, it can be tough and downright grueling some days. And so this conference is designed to talk about all of those different aspects of raising a toddler so we can raise emotionally healthy, emotionally resilient little beings while also just feeling more calm and patience, enjoy ourselves in the parenting process.
Dream come true. So to find more about this conference and to join us, I'm going to place a link in the description of this podcast episode, or you're going to get an email as well. So look for the email or open the description and you will find it there to join me and Devin into the Transforming Toddlerhood Conference.
I am Marcela Collier, head coach of HIC Parenting Education Agency, and you are listening to the Parenting with Understanding podcast. HIC Parenting is a parenting education agency with the mission to help parents like you break their cycle of frustration, bring peace to their parenting, and raise emotionally healthy children.
Okay, Devin, so let's start with these questions. I have quite a few questions from toddler parents. Her name is Marie. She has a one-year-old, and then she says that he is expressing all his feelings through hitting. How can I stop this age-appropriate behavior? So the first thing that I can tell about Mary is that she's an educated parent. Number one, she understands that her son is expressing feelings, not that he's rude or he's a spoiled brat. So she is able to see the feelings beneath the hitting. Number two that I can tell is that she recognizes that hitting is an age-appropriate behavior. And for that reason, I know that Mary is my follower and Mary is an educated parent. But then she is asking a question. How can I stop an age-appropriate behavior? And can you really stop an age-appropriate behavior? I want to know about your take on this one, and then I'm going to tell you what I think about this question.
Absolutely. Well, I really love this question because, you know, it's wonderful that we're at a point where parents are starting to really know and understand that behaviors that we used to judge, that we used to, you know, label as bad or rude or terrible, downright terrible, right? Terrible toddlers, is that these are age-appropriate behaviors where kids are expressing their feelings, emotions, and needs. So the question is, can we stop an age-appropriate behavior? No. I would say no, that we're not looking to stop an age-appropriate behavior, because if we're looking to stop something, we're looking to suppress a child's natural trajectory of development. However, yes, we can transform this behavior through teaching skills. So our focus isn't, whenever we have a misbehavior from a child, what we might label as a misbehavior or, you know, behavior that we don't like or don't want to see, what we can ask ourselves, instead of saying, how do I make this behavior stop? The question that we really want to ask ourselves as parents and caregivers is, what does my child need in this moment? What skills does my child need to learn to have this behavior go differently? What can I do as a parent to meet my child's needs in this moment? What skills does my child need to learn to transform this behavior? So that's where I like to start in these moments.
Mm-hmm. I want to add something. As a parent of a neurodivergent child, and I'm autistic myself, so I grew up as a neurodivergent child as well. When it comes to neurodivergent children, what we call age-appropriate behaviors might not apply, because you might still see an 8-year-old with autism hitting when they have big feelings, you know? That being said, when it comes to neurodivergent parenting, things are a little bit different. And prevention, it's better than correction. Why? Because once the overwhelm, the sensory overload, the sensory overwhelm, and the anxiety comes in, it's like a train that, like, try to put yourself in front of a train and stop it. That's how it feels like when it comes to helping a neurodivergent child who is in the middle of an autistic meltdown, right? What I do with my neurodivergent son when he was a toddler, and even now that he's 8, is to learn to recognize what his sensory sensitivities are and meet them beforehand. So if I know that big crowds are a biggie for him, then it's not about avoiding big crowds. It's about, okay, we're about to enter Disneyland. Where are the spaces that I could go to give my child a break before his nervous system gets so dysregulated that he cannot stop himself from going to the floor and having a toddler-like tantrum, right? So I apply this with my 8-year-old, and I encourage you to look from that perspective, your toddler behavior, regardless if they're neurodivergent or not. So what is usually triggering them, and how can you prepare in advance to meet that need, which a lot of the times are sensory needs as well, even if they're not neurodivergent, and if they are, so much so, and how we can meet them before they get to that level of dysregulation that nothing helps but just being there until they calm down.
Yeah, and a great way to really get started on this, and a tool that's really awesome for parents, is tracking behavior. And so we can just track it in the notes section of our phone or on like a piece of paper on our fridge, but just start to notice when the behavior is happening.
and what was happening right before the behavior started. And this will allow parents to start finding patterns. And when we can start seeing patterns and behavior, this is what opens the space for us to help us prevent it and use the tools that Marcella is talking about, which is great because the more that we can prevent these behaviors by happening, by meeting our children's needs in advance, then it's going to be a lot easier for everyone. Sometimes it's possible, sometimes it's not. But when we are able to see those patterns and do that, it can be super helpful.
So Alicia, she's asking, she has two 2-year-olds, so 2-year-old twins, and they play fight a lot. Is there a way to stop this behavior? Play fighting. So how Devin said, every behavior communicates a need. So they're play fighting. So I assume they're not hitting each other. They're not fighting because they're angry with each other, because they're frustrated. They're having a good time. They're enjoying the time. They're happy. They're just in their playful, sympathetic state energy. Their sympathetic nervous system, which is their activation part of their nervous system, is on. And this is what happens usually when it comes to play fights. Excitement feels to the brain similar to children as stress because it releases the same kind of hormones, which is adrenaline, right? When we are stressed, we release adrenaline and cortisol. And when we are overly excited, we do so as well. As adults, we are able to identify those two and say, hey, I'm just excited. Okay. But little kids, they don't. And then adrenaline brings energy to their limbs and that it reinforces or feeds a possible play fight or hitting during play. So that being said, how do I make a stop? Again, the question is not about making a stop. It's about how can I meet the need in a different way? If I see that after 5 minutes of jumping in the trampoline, they start hitting each other, maybe I know that that's their window of tolerance when it comes to that kind of energetic play. And I might give them a break before the hitting happens or when it does happen, because they're not in their survival brain. They're still in their social engagement. They're still in their, what research calls, in their central vagal nervous system, which is they're engaged, they're happy, they're responsive. You can easily redirect them to a different thing. Oh, I see that you need to move your body. Okay, let's move our body doing jumping jacks and redirect them that way. That's different from distraction. Pay attention to this because, and I'm not talking to you, Devin, I'm talking to the listener, because distraction and redirection are two different things. When we distract our children from a tantrum or from hitting, we are running away from their feelings. Oh, look at the fly on the wall. And then we hope that that just makes them stop hitting and tantruming. When we redirect them, we understand the need and we meet the need in a different way, in a more pro-social way. That's completely different. What's your take on that? What's your advice? Play fight.
Well, so I love what you're talking about here because I think it's a common misconception that when we see kids, you know, fighting in any way, whether it's like play or not, we think that, oh, kids get like out of control or dysregulated, out of control with their behaviors because they're experiencing what we might label as a negative emotion. Like they're frustrated, they're sad, they're mad, they're disappointed. But what a lot of parents and caregivers don't realize is that what we might label as, you know, positive emotions, like excitement and fun and all of this, can also lead to dysregulation. And so it's just knowing that there can be reasons that are less obvious to us that can dysregulate a child. So when we see that kids are, you know, have reached that threshold, we know that for next time, okay, that's too long. We need to intervene before they reach that threshold. And that threshold might change daily because it's going to have a lot to do with, are your kids tired? Are they hungry? Do they have a lot of other kind of like big feelings and emotions building up from something else that happened during the day? But in the end, what we want to realize is that this isn't a time to punish our kids and separate them and lecture them and use a lot of logic and say, you know better, you can't play like this. What we want to do is come in and create connection when it happens and while still setting limits on unsafe behavior. And so I'm a really big fan of what I like to call observe and describe, where we can just notice what's happening and put it on loudspeaker. Once we, you know, get everyone separated, it might be like, wow, you were jumping on the trampoline and having so much fun. Then you started bumping into each other. You didn't like it. And now everyone was wrestling with each other. And that wasn't safe. And just because that buys us time to think about how we want to respond, let ourselves get regulated. And it buys time for our children to get to become more calm and regulated, because first of all, we're meeting them where they're at. I like to think of it as like a bridge. You know, we're not on the other side of the bridge and they're over here and we're saying, hey, you need to do this, or hey, get over here. What we're doing is we're walking across the bridge, holding their hand and saying, hey, I see you, I hear you. And then we're walking hand in hand with them over the bridge to where we want them to be.
That's awesome. I love that perspective that you give, that analogy of we are walking the bridge with them. We're not pushing them off the bridge, hoping for them to swim. We are walking with them alongside them. So there is another one here, and this is another topic. So this is Lindsay, and then she's saying, my daughter is pushing her bedtime back by an hour. Tips to get her to sleep. Okay, so I see two situations here. Number one, and disclaimer as well, I'm not a sleep consultant, but I do have training on toddler sleep. And one thing that I do know, that if you have an older toddler, maybe close to 3, his sleep pattern might have changed, and his naps, her naps. So one thing that I live with my twin toddlers at the time, now they're 8, is that they started changing their sleep patterns when they were about to be 3, you know, around that age. They would happily go down for a long nap, but then bedtime was a struggle. My encouragement for you is to see if your child is transitioning to needing less naps during the day, to having more hours at night during the night. That might be one of the reasons, right? And the second thing that I want to say, tips to get her to sleep. This is going to be counterintuitive. And I don't think I've heard any other professional saying this, but it's true. Our job is not to get our children to fall asleep, because nobody gets nobody's body to do anything. My husband doesn't get me or make me fall asleep. Like, my body's autonomous, and then I fall asleep when my body feels sleepy, when my nervous system is calm. So our job is not to get our children to fall asleep, is to provide them with the environment and the conditions for their nervous system to calm down and invite sleep, for the melatonin to kick in, for their bodies to feel regulated. And that's one thing that I want to say when it comes to regulation. A dysregulated body cannot fall asleep. So if we are frustrated at the end of our road, if our children sense us in that rushed, frustrated, overwhelmed energy, there is no way for their new nervous system to regulate, calm down, and go to sleep. So 3 things that I would say here. Number one, look at your child's sleep schedule and see if it has changed. Number two, create the conditions, not for her to get her to sleep, but for her nervous system to calm down and invite sleep. And number three, check with your nervous system with how you're approaching bedtime, because your level of regulation is going to determine your child's level of calmness and ultimately the time that your daughter is going to fall asleep.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think this is the thing that we're confronted with in toddlerhood, as we have, you know, we're caring for these small beings who are developing a sense of self for the first time and are creating independence in their lives, that we really quickly realize that we don't have as much control as we think we do or as we wish we had. And especially we're faced with this when we come to different aspects of the body. So we can really see this clear around meetings, around potting, around sleeping. We can't make a child go to the bathroom. We can't make a child chew food and swallow it. We can't make a child fall asleep. That's why these three areas are often the most frustrating for toddler parents, is because we're faced with the fact that we actually are in control. We can influence our child in a positive way or a negative way, but we cannot control them. So that's what makes bedtime so challenging. So first, I would say, yes, you want to look at if you've had a time change recently. We sprung forward an hour and we're in a lot of places. And so even my little one's going to bed an hour later, but he is a chronic early riser. So this worked out in our favor right now. Even though he's going to bed a little bit later, he's sleeping in a little bit later. And most kids, you know, will want to drop their nap between 2.5 and 4 years old. And it's different for every child. And naps usually just don't drop all of a sudden. You know, you'll have a child who's like taking a nap 5 days a week and then 3 days a week. So we want to see, okay, you know, what does this look like? And on days that our child doesn't take a nap, if they're in the process of dropping naps, we're going to want to put them to bed an hour, maybe even an hour and a half earlier. So we are sure that they don't become overtired, because when a child's overtired, it can also impact their ability to fall asleep at night. So it's not only about being undertired, but are they overtired as well? Also, we should remember that toddlerhood, we have lots of different waves of separation anxiety for little ones. And so oftentimes, you know, this will come and go several times throughout toddlerhood, and your little one might be going through a phase of separation anxiety. But in the end, we want to look at, how do we meet our child with connection? How do we set limits in a firm yet kind way? How do we build their independence around sleep in a way that is in alignment with our parenting and their needs? Then from there, look at, okay, does my child need a little bit of rough and tumble play before bed and then some relaxing? Or does my child need an earlier bedtime or a slightly later bedtime? Do I need to set some limits around how many times we're going to get out of bed and get a cup of water? But we can do all of these things in a way that prioritizes connection, because in the end, it's hard for children sometimes to go to sleep on their own at night, because most of us adults actually share a bed with someone. And, you know, so it's like in human nature to want to be in close proximity to others. And so we have to understand that for toddlers, the more that we can feed their need for connection, the easier it's going to be for them to separate and be able to fall asleep at night.
Awesome. So one last question. When I ask my daughter to clean up her toys, she says no.
I love that word. I love when they find that the word no gives them power. So don't strip off your child from the power of being able to tell you no. And that's counterintuitive as well. I want my children to listen to me. Yes, and yeah, is yes, and you want your children to know they have a voice and they can say no and they feel like saying no. So when it comes to picking up toys, the second thing is the picking up toys. When it comes to picking up toys or any other task, any other chore, our priorities are not our toddler's priorities. We have a sense of morality and we have values and belief systems, and we believe that it's important to keep the room clean and tidy in order to enjoy it the next day. Our toddlers come with no belief system, no values, no morals. They're blank slates for us to start building those on them. So it makes sense to me why, if she wants to keep playing and you say it's time to pick up, she just wants to keep playing and not picking up. Okay? So it's not about you or that you're doing something wrong or she's just such a strong will. It's that she's very new to what is right and how the system works in your family. And that's where I encourage you to work towards providing her with a structure so she starts learning how the family dynamic works. That her little body starts learning, hey, every time right before bath time, before dinner, that's the time that we pick up our toys and mommy picks up her own stuff too. You could call it picking up time. You pick up your toys, I fold the blankets, I pick up the controllers off the floor, and it's pickup time. So your daughter starts seeing the flow and the structure of the family, and then she sees it not as being directed and controlled and told what to do, but she's just part of the family dynamic, as you are. Number two, it has to do with attention span as well. In general terms, little kids' attention span is about 3 to 5 minutes per year of age. So if your toddler picked up 4 toys and then they're done, they're done. They're ready to move on. They're transitioning out of the picking up toys. So work on your expectations as well. Your two-year-old might not pick up the entire room. Like, the purpose of her picking up is not tidying up the room, is learning this family system of picking up before bath time. It's her learning the value of responsibilities, her learning the value of having the house clean or being tidy. So instead of focusing on the outcome, focus on what's the value I'm trying to teach. And my daughter picked up 4 toys. Okay, we can keep working on that skill tomorrow and then tomorrow and then tomorrow. And when they're 5 years old, they might not pick up just 1 toy or 2 toys. They might pick up everything or half of it, you know, depending on what their needs are. With my twins, my autistic one picks 2 toys up and then he's done. And the other one, the neurotypical one, he started doing things a lot more consistent and to the end, a lot faster. So consider their needs as well, if they have special needs. So that's what I have to say about that.
Well, I agree that it's easy to have expectations that are not in alignment with our child's level of development. And so this is a place where we want to like realign our expectations and to understand that little kids live in the moment. They're not thinking about X, Y, Z coming up. They're living in the moment. And so it's important for us to, first of all, let them know, hey, in 10 minutes, we're going to clean up toys. Hey, in 5 minutes, we're going to clean up toys. Hey, it's time to clean up toys. You know, like really helping them create that runway so we don't catch them by surprise. And then what we want to do is remember to focus on building the skill. Oftentimes, we feel like kids should, especially young children, should just know how to do this. But the reality is that these are life skills that young kids are learning. They have very little life experience. So it's our job to teach them a skill, not to force them to do this thing that we want them to do, but teach the skill. And we need to build up that skill and eventually transfer it to young kids, because the best way to teach a skill to young kids is to model it. So if we're standing there and expect our kids to clean up the playroom, it's not going to work out that way. What we need to do is meet them where they're at, join them in cleaning up, and then building on successes. And so as Marcella said, you know, if your kid picks up 4 toys, that's amazing. Now, in the next, you know, few days, week, we want to focus on 5 toys, 6 toys. Also, it's important to realize that kids can easily become overwhelmed by their environment. And so if the playroom is overpacked or there's toys everywhere, it might not be obvious to your child what cleaning up means and where toys should go. So it's best to kind of pare down the toys, make sure each toy has a place. So then it's really clear to a child where things go. And so as we're transferring those skills to them, we want to, you know, break it down, give them maybe a specific task inside of it, because clean up the toys is so broad. We might say, hey, can you put the cars in the bin? That is a more specific task that's measurable that young kids can like grab onto. And the other things I would say is just keep it playful, keep it fun, keep it positive. Because really what we want to do here is create a series of positive experiences, a series of fun experiences. And this is going to motivate your child to want to do this again and again.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. You're right. And not comparing one child to the other, how I said, my neurodivergent one has a harder time keeping up with cleaning up tasks than the other. We all learn differently. And you know what? Personality as well. Like, some people are just more tidy than others just because. And that's okay. Thank you so much, Devin, for coming to the Parenting with Understanding podcast. You are a wealth of knowledge. I love everything you have to say. You are so in alignment with everything I believe. I love your advice.
where people can find you besides the conference.
Yes. So you can, of course, join the Transforming Toddler Code conference. It's free. You can also find me at Transforming Toddlerhood on Instagram, on Facebook, and my website, transformingtoddlerhood.com.
That's awesome. Okay. So, Marcela, what about when they were hitting children? I cannot remember. If you want to access the show notes, all you have to do is go to hicparenting.com and you will find the show notes there alongside important links like the toddler conference and Devin's social media. And you will see all the answers that we gave to these burning questions from you, toddler parents. If this podcast episode gave you an aha moment, if it helped you understand your toddler a lot better and happy parent a toddler, then I encourage you to leave us a positive review, open the description, and let us know how it helped you, or if the entire Parenting with Understanding podcast has helped you bring peace to your parenting and raise emotionally healthy children, let us know how it has helped you as well. Remember to join our toddler conference. I'm going to be there talking on the topic of discipline with Devin. And that's it. Remember, it only takes understanding of yourself and of your children to transform your parenting. That's Parenting with Understanding. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Parenting with Understanding podcast. For more information on how to bring peace to your parenting and raise emotionally healthy children, head over to www.hicparenting.com. We'll see you soon.